Welcome back, folks. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I'm the managing editor of blessyouboys.com. We've got a couple special guests here tonight. We're doing another combo podcast with the Don't Call It a Rebuild podcast. So we've got Mark Garrosh here, and he'll be taking the lead for most of this as the host. And then the man we'll be interviewing in, the man whose opinions we're most interested in, is Mr. Brian Sikowski. Mr. Sikowski is the National Scouting Supervisor for Perfect Game USA. So he's seen basically anyone you're going to see in this draft since they were teenagers, and has a ton of insight into the draft and who the Tigers may be looking at, and hopefully some ideas for who they might be thinking about later on in the comp round and possibly in the second round. So we'll talk to him about those things. He's also an assistant baseball coach for Orchard Lake St. Mary, who are the recent state champions. So we'll have to talk to him about that a little bit as well. Yeah, so thanks for joining us, and we'll get underway.
It's time to do our annual Major League draft analysis and discussion. Brian is the VP of scouting for Perfect Game. He's seen almost everybody play, and if you didn't see him play this year, he saw him play 3 years ago when they were high schoolers. Been doing this for quite some time. And at the list of opinions that I respect, when he sees people, he's right at the top. B, how you doing?
I'm great, man. I'm excited. This is one of my favorite annual little phone calls that we do. Like catching up with you guys. Obviously, we chat throughout the course of the year in Twitter DMs and that. But it's always nice to culminate it with the actual podcast episode where we just yell at each other for an hour and. You know, in the end, we just go with what Mark says anyways.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Right. You know,
yeah. Alavila's an idiot. Yeah. just assume that none of us like Alavila from the beginning, so we don't need to talk about it too much.
It's nice to be humored at this age. First, before we jump off, congratulations again, state champion. It's getting to
Thank
be
you.
Old yeah. hat there, dude.
It's, you know, it's the fact that we didn't get to play high school baseball in 2020 is so far down the list of things that, like, COVID fucked up, you know, in terms of importance. But, like, if we would have gotten to play in 2020, I think we might have had that three-peat a couple days ago, because I think last year's team would have been really good as well, but... So that would have been even more special, but as it is, all of them, any win, you know, even a midweek win against whoever in the middle of regular season, like, wins are fun. We've been doing a lot of it the last several years at St. Mary's, and I'm just very, very lucky to be a part of it. It's coaching's easy when the players are all way better than the people that they play against. Like, I'm not, like, you know, talking shit. It's just like, when your team is incredibly talented, all you got to do is kind of manage egos a little bit. And so it made for a fun spring for sure.
Yeah, just got to keep everybody pulling the same direction pretty much and stay out of their way otherwise. Yeah.
Yep. And they did a great job. They you know, obviously a lot of them knew each other. We haven't played in a year, so we lost all of the seniors from 2019 and the juniors from 2019 too, you know, on to college now. But so there was a bunch of sophomores and freshmen on that team in 2019 that won, and it's a lot of the names that you know, Alex Mooney and Schubart and Porter and Dresselhaus and Crichton and those guys. They were all around, but we had to backfill. You know, backfill is not the right word, but it was a lot of guys who this was their first go around at the varsity level, and a freshman. There was a couple sophomores who started and played every game for us. A junior who is extremely talented, but this is his first year at St. Mary's. Like some new pieces added to the mix, but they all became best friends very quickly, and that made for a fun team.
Without droning on too long about this, but I think it's important to note, this very well may be one of the most storied, talented high school baseball teams of, for sure, the last 25 to 30 years. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's easy to sit here and say that now because we won Saturday. Like, if we hadn't won Saturday, you know, but, yeah, I don't know if there were more than two or three teams in the country this year who I could look at and say might be better than us. I don't know if there's ever been a better team in the state of Michigan as far as high school goes. I think that I would take this 2021 St. Mary's team against whatever iteration of whatever team you'd like in state history. As far as overall, like, we're probably not as good as that Harvard-Westlake team that had Giolito, no, and Freed and Flaherty, but
and
I
they
think,
didn't
you know,
win.
No, and they didn't win. Yeah, they didn't win.
Yeah,
so, that's true. You know, I think that we're definitely in the conversation for one of the better high school teams of all time, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, like, we're number one.
You know,
one,
the only team, the only team I remember that had as many D1 quality players on it recently, I think, was the 2006 Rice team. And mm-hmm. Lynch, Pickens. It had quite a few guys.
Yep.
That went to U of M and a few other places. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, LeMahieu was a. I think Deej was.
He graduated 07. He was a year.
So
above,
it was either 2005 or 6. Deej was, I think, a sophomore on that team. But you guys conceivably have two guys that are going to get picked in the top 60, right?
Next year, yeah. This year we got.
Oh, right.
Moni,
I'm sorry.
Be, yeah. Next year there's. I mean, I don't want to limit it. There's a bunch of guys. I think Porter and Schubart and Ike Irish are all potentials to be higher draft guys next year for sure.
Yeah. So you guys are looking to go and repeat this again. Yeah.
We're trying. We're going to try. It's a, yeah. You know, looking forward to next year as Mississippi State just hit a home run. I'm sorry. I'm watching the College World Series as well. But anyways, yeah, we're going to lose Mooney, and that's a big loss. And we're going to lose, you know, three of the four main starters that we had on the mound this year. But, you know, most of the lineup's back. A lot of the sophomores that pitched on JV this year will be big pieces next year. You know, I'm optimistic about next year, too, for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Great team in somebody, something that 30 or 40 years from now, people will probably be talking about what a great team this was, which will be fun for you when even you're 70 years old one day. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the upcoming draft in a few weeks. The College World Series has been fun. The Tigers have, Brandon, you correct me if I'm wrong about this. They got pick 3, pick 32, and pick 37, I think.
Yeah. 39.
Yep. Oh, is it 39?
I think it's okay. 39. I think it's 39, but yes.
And there's been a lot of discussion, but let's talk about – I think I feel confident in saying that my big three in this are Mayer, Lawler, Leiter. There's been a lot of subterfuge and then crazy people like to talk about, yeah, let's see if we can pay this guy way under slot. And then my answer to that is, yeah, what are you going to do with all the extra money at 32 if the guy you want's not there?
Right.
Then you're right. Like, oh, I should have bought a bigger house at 3. because I asked this question multiple times, and I'd love to hear the answer from the two of you, but so besides the Korea, who they actually had number one on their board too, by the way, and Luno in the deviousness, and there may not have been a more devious general manager in memory, had him number one, but he of course made Korea not think that was the case. They signed him way under slot and they were able to sign McCullers, but tell me another draft where somebody tried to do that in retrospect, they looked at it and went, wow, we really, that was great. That was really clever what we did.
The jury's still kind of out on some of these classes that have done that because that is a relatively recent thing with the draft slots. Like Kerstad last year with the Orioles spreading shit around. You know, like we don't know yet if that was
smart. Yeah.
But like, you know, the big example you look at ends up being 15 and 16, right? The Phillies do Moniak way under slot at one. And then in 16, the Twins did Royce Lewis way under slot at one. I haven't followed either.
That's my question.
Yeah. The Phillies was like, they saved that money and paid like Cole Stobie and Kevin Gowdy, I think, or something like that. Which
I'm sure they're feeling good about that.
Not great. I don't remember exactly what the Twins did. Was that – no, that wasn't the Kirilloff year. Kirilloff was 15, I think, right, or 16, whatever it was. Yeah, 16 and 17. I said 15 and 16. That's my bad. 16 and 17. Twins took Royce Lewis at 1 and 17. So it depends on how you see that one, but it really doesn't work all that often, really. You know, at least in terms of the, like, large swing. You know, like, let's save $2 million here. It works at, like, when you're, like, picking – it works in the style of if the Tigers would have made a better pick than Reynaldo Rivera with their second pick in 2017. Like, all right, let's save 300 here to spread it later. That works more frequency than –
Wait. They did.
No, I'm saying if you take a better player – yeah, if you take a better player, it works.
Yeah. You've got to get get Parker Meadows.
Right. Yeah. But you see that work more than you see, like, saving a mil and a half early work.
Well, it seems it's really tough to do that. Yeah. I mean, in the top of the draft, like, the scrutiny on those guys is just so tight. You'd have to find someone that you really believe was undervalued by everyone, which is just not, you know, not usually the case. So, yeah, it's tough to pull that
up. The first big one was what? Like, well, Correa, you obviously mentioned, but what year was Hunter Dozier and Sean Manaea, where the Royals floated Manaea way down because they saved on Dozier at 8? Was that, like, 14, 13 maybe?
Yeah.
That actually,
if you really want to be fair-minded,
worked
pretty well.
Yeah. Manaea ended up okay. He's not in Kansas City, but, like, that was a big trade piece. You go to a World Series and win a World Series after that happens, like, you know.
Yeah. Yep, that works. And he turned out to be a major league pitcher and a fairly good one when he's healthy.
Yep. So. Hunter Dozier plays in the big leagues.
Major leaguers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So, all right. So,
well, that, let me just say, I mean, that's the kind of thing that just appeals to a certain type of draft watcher, you know, where, like, the minute, like, Gunnar Hoglund goes down, everybody's scheming to somehow, you know, get him to sign in the second or something, you know.
That's what you see, like, the fucking part, I don't know, are we swearing on this?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, okay. The real like, bare bones way of putting it is, like, if you do that, you are hoping that you can get 2 5s instead of a 6 and a 4. You're hoping that you can get 2 5s instead of trying for that 6 or that 7 and falling short and then not having shit to back it up. That's what you're hoping for. No one gets 2 6s doing that. Like, no one thinks they're getting 2 6s doing that.
Yeah.
But because how many 6s are you even grading on your board? Do you think that you're going to float your 6th best player who's, like, the last guy that you have a 6 on? Like, that, you know, you're hoping you can get 2 5s, and it rarely works out that way.
All right, so let's get specific. That being said, you've seen all of – this seems to be a pretty solid class of 10 to 12, maybe even more players this year. Okay, a lot of high school shortstops in the top 60. And so top three, you've been at a lot of showcases and a lot of events. Where do you, understanding what the Tigers have done in recent years, and one of the few compliments I can give them is they have done an excellent job of combining the player that has the highest floor with upside. They have not, in the past few years, done anything too goofy, okay? Which leads me to think they won't do it now. So what do you think, what are you hearing, and what do you think the top three that they're going to be that's probably on their board, and how do you think this is going to go?
Well, I think that, like, if you were just following trends of, like, what they've done and what they've done really well at, I think that Leiter at three would be so great because he immediately joins the timeline of Torkelson, Green, and Dingler. He's right there. He's already pitching in Double-A, essentially. You know what I mean? So it's, I like the idea of joining that timeline, but at the same time, they've done a good job identifying. They got Riley Green at 5, who's looking like he might be the best player in that draft. Really,
no argument from Mark Borah.
With the exception of was that Rutschman? You know, whatever year that was,
before it's over, he could be there with Rutschman.
Right, and so, like,
the catcher position is going to change. So I mean, I think some of those things can trick you up too. So
if you've identified Marcelo Meyer, it's that. You know, I take Marcelo Meyer. We're not the days of, like, needing years and years and years to project on high school guys is seemingly narrowing. Mm-hmm. Riley Green is currently tearing up Double A. Not every high-end high school hitter is Riley Green. In fact, most of them are not. But if Marcelo Meyer is that guy too, where he's moving quickly at the same time, like, oh shit, this is probably a six, this looks great, then I think those are the two. I think they might have House ahead of Lawler. I think they might have Job ahead of Lawler. I think that Job is more a potentiality than people would want to give it credit for. But with that being said, I still don't think it happens. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it'll be like if Meyer or Leiter are there, he'll be the pick. I think that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Brandon, what do you think?
I mean, all that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, I just think about it at this point from who I want. And yeah, it's Meyer, Leiter, and Lawler. I still like Lawler quite a bit, but mm-hmm. I don't trust myself evaluating high school talent. So
Lawler's good. There, it's more the he's more of like a full package. If
yeah,
you want to put it that way,
yeah.
You know, like he can play short more of a sure thing than other guys can. And he's got some power, but, you know, it's not as much as others, et cetera, et cetera. He's not left-handed. It's Lawler versus House is kind of like the, do you prefer the relative safety of this high school bat or like the relative upside of this high school?
Well, right. You've seen both of them, and you and I talked a little bit about Lawler, and I'm intrigued by Lawler because for two reasons. Not the same bat as Bobby Witt Jr., but some of the similar fanfare with their junior and senior years have been overly scrutinized. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen and what people like you have schooled me about, the glove is a 50-60, okay? Mm-hmm. Probably by far the best shortstop glove of the good bats in this shortstop draft, right?
That's fair. Yep.
A lot of speed. Okay. He's a gamer. And really the questions that make some people uneasy have to do with the bat. Okay. Not that the bat is still very good. There's been a little swing and miss. There's some things. And you and I had a discussion about this because I think people often overlook how major league teams look at talent, which is they don't always look at it. How does this kid look as a senior in high school again, or
right.
In these showcases? It's what's the framework of the skill set? How consistent, how's the plate discipline? How's the spin recognition? And how the actions of, you know, they are in the batter's box. Do they get nervous with two strikes? You know, what's their attack angle? And what can I do to enhance this kid as a hitter once we get a hold of him? And I think Riley Green is an outstanding example of that. And whether you want to credit the Tigers or credit what he does in the offseason with his dad and other people, but as good a hitter as Riley Green was as a high school senior, he's a much more polished, tight hitter now than he was 2 years ago. Is that a fair comment? You saw him a lot.
Yeah, I saw Riley a ton. He, you know, he's played travel baseball for the guy who is now my boss. Like, you know, Jared came on board with us right around when Riley was drafted. But, yeah, so anyways, I've been around Riley forever just in terms of watching him play. He played for FTB. They were in every damn tournament we run. But, yeah, it was always a super advanced guy from an approach standpoint, from an understanding of what he wants to do, like going to the plate with a plan, understanding his own swing, always super advanced. But, like, you have to – there's an element of when guys get themselves out in high school baseball, how much of that will go away when they're facing – guys who are like actually trying to get them out versus this is the dude throwing 64 miles an hour that I have to face this week. And he hasn't thrown me a strike in a month. Like, I just want to swing the bat today in front of these 40 scouts who are here. Oh shit. I got under a fly ball. You know, like there's an element of that. There really is. I don't know how to quantify it. I don't know if you can, but I saw it with Mooney this spring to a degree, you know, like that pressing of needing to do something when it's okay if you walk four times. You know, so some of that then sheds away when guys turn on the Jets when they get into pro ball. You know, like, there's no more of that. So maybe an element of getting himself out goes away immediately because he's more tight, like, this matters more now or whatever.
Yeah, I heard in your best showcase events, like, last year, he was really good at the plate, though.
Yes,
like,
yes.
The better the pitching, the better he was.
That's correct. And it was just some elements of in high school baseball, some things like that.
I mean, that's what you're kind of looking at, right? I mean, you're kind of looking at who are they facing here?
Yep.
You know, how tough is the competition? Or is this just one of those guys where maybe he's going to try to reach across the plate and, you know, and poke this 70 mile per hour fastball to left field too much? Yeah.
It's easier to quantify in our events too, because it's like every field has a radar gun on it. Like every stat is kept, you know, by an impartial observer, blah, 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 blah. And then you get into high school baseball and you can't control the competition. You can kind of do that on the summer circuit and travel ball. You can kind of, to a degree, control that you're going to see good stuff for the most part. In high school, you have no control over that. So there is an interesting little, I don't know if dichotomy is the right word, but like you have to scout spring looks differently than you scout summer looks is kind of my point.
There's just more chaos in the system, yeah.
Way more noise, yeah.
That's what I'm saying about Lawler. In some weird way, and it happened to Witt too, which the season that year, he got overanalyzed into dust, okay? And you know, once he went back to playing against really quality pitching all the time, you were like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Yep. We were right all along. Yeah.
I think that Jordan Lawler in some weird way is a little undervalued. And, you know, if somebody gets him at 5, 6, 7, I think they'll end up being pretty happy with that. And that's why if they take him at 3, because Marin and Leiter are gone, you won't hear me complaining.
No, and I don't think anybody. I think Lawler is, if you take him at 3, you view him as a top 3 talent. Like, I don't know of anybody who would actively argue against that. It's just there seems to be, like, some people just like House a little bit more, so therefore he's the guy. Some people like Joe that
House,
you know.
Bat more.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And House is, he really is an underrated athlete. He's a giant, and he runs, like, 6'6"s and moves well at short and, like, just because he's so big, yeah, I think eventually he probably will end up a third baseman. But to just automatically pigeonhole him there when he might have 10 years left to play in short. He might not be a shortstop when he's 35, but he probably will be when he's 23. It's just unfair. Like, that dude has a chance to play short, man. That's a really fucking good athlete. He's just massive. That's a dude that, like, if – you know, Texas offered him in football as a tight end, all the pundits would be like, oh yeah, we get it. Look at how he stretches the field. Like, that's a freak, man.
Is he playing suburban Atlanta or not?
Yeah. I believe he's Buford High School. Is that? No, he's not Buford. He's Winder Barrow. Yeah. It's Metro Atlanta. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, which is, you could argue.
Very strong.
Besides California. Very strong. The best baseball in the world.
He matched up with, I hope I'm not messing this up, but I'm pretty sure he saw Bubba Chandler this year. I'm pretty sure he saw Carter Holton this year. You know, like guys who are household names. Some guys for next year, like up underclassmen he saw. I think he saw Dylan Lesko, whose name you'll hear about soon, you know, as we look to 22. But, yeah, he saw competition, and he matched this spring. He had a really good spring.
So if they took House instead of Lawler, you wouldn't be disappointed.
No, I just think that's like, that's absolutely one perspective, you know, like that's absolutely, it's not like a off the board thing. It's not, you know, Alavila like reverting to drafting poorly or it's like not that. It's just like, okay, so you prefer the more explosive power upside of this bat than you do like with Lawler, which is the more sure thing shortstop, more 5 tool potential guy. But just House, with a lower ceiling. And that's,
I mean,
okay.
Is it fair to say that, like, I mean, House is, like, a little bit more of swinging for a home run, whereas Lawler's, like, taking your double. Like that kind of thing. Yeah.
And I think House is way more hittable than just, like, throwing him in the power guy archetype. I think that that's like, I don't have like the pray for a 50 bat on him. I have a comfortable 55 hit tool on Hops. Like, I think that dude's got a chance to hit.
And he's got a cannon for an arm, too, right? He's kind of a freak athlete, like you were saying,
If he couldn't hit at all, he'd throw 100 in a bullpen. Like, two summers ago now, it's probably been 2 years. Maybe it's been 23 months. He was 93, 96 with a banger out of a bullpen. Like, you know, this is the 16-year-old. He's young, too. He's like 18 to 2 months or something. He's younger.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, this is – people fuck around and forget about Brady House. Like, and you're going to fuck around and find out if Brady, you know what I mean? It's he's got a chance to be really, really good. He is really good.
Would you feel comfortable saying, knowing, you know, the history of how Charrington has drafted, and he is a very shrewd amateur draft guy, not to mention good. Mm-hmm. At IFAs, you know, he's very good at getting foreign players also, but it'd be highly unlikely that they would not draft Marcelo Mayer. Would you feel pretty comfortable saying that at the top right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they know. Like, I think that they might, you know, they're trying to explore the possibilities of, like, is saving $1 million and taking Henry Davis, is that $1 million worth the value loss between Henry Davis and whatever their highest graded guy is? You know, that's what I think they're in the process of figuring out. And I'm just using Henry Davis as an example. Insert Jack Leiter, insert Lawler, insert whoever you want. Insert Khalil Watson. But I don't know. I think that's what it's going to come down to is, like, do we have Meyer graded above what $1.3 extra $1 million could give us later? You know, in terms of what they project out to value. But I think, I don't think that Meyer is the one slam dunk either. I don't think he's Mize or Rutschman or you know, Strasburg or Harper or whatever. Like, I don't think he's at that level in a tier on his own either. So, you know, I'm not entirely convinced I wouldn't have Leiter as my personal 1-1. I don't think it's that easy this year. With a slam dunk guy. So I don't know. I could absolutely see them taking Meyer, and that would probably be the right thing to do. I don't know.
Well, looking through, like, the top, you know, like the guys that you're seeing, you know, 1 through 8, just about everywhere. I mean, it's like, you could probably take Davis out as far as being like a 1 or 2 pick, probably, but maybe not. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Rocker is out of that group as well. But other than that, yeah, I mean, you could kind of look at Watson, Mayer, Lawler, House, Leiter. You could Job maybe take your pick.
But what if you have Davis graded 1/2 grade lower than everybody else, and he says he'll sign for $4 million?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that worth it to you? I don't know. No. Like, I'm not in those rooms. But like, that's why you can't count anybody out right now in that top tier, I don't think.
And that might be the scheme for, like, okay, instead of the 250s, maybe we think we've got a 55 and then we get the 50 later. Yeah, right.
Right. Yep. Yep.
I always look at drafting in the top 3 or 4 like buying real estate. Okay. You rarely get in trouble overpaying. You get in lots of trouble by trying to be the smartest guy in the room when someone offers you certain value for something and you pass up much better real estate than the idea that you think you're getting a deal, okay?
And,
look, I understand that at 30. I understand reaching when risk makes sense, okay? It's like investing in real estate. I'll say risk in this way. There's risk and there's calculated risk, okay? Mm-hmm. Try to make a calculated risk. And for sure, in the top 3 or 4, you have to take calculated risk. Mm-hmm. And that's why I discussed what they have done well in the past few years is they've resisted to try to be the smartest guy in the room. And they've just done something that, even if it didn't work out perfect, it would still work out well. So... Mm-hmm. Somebody drafted a guy two picks behind us or 3 picks behind us that ended up being better, but my guy still ended up playing in the show and was a contributing major league average player. You can't be mad at that. Okay?
Right. Yep.
Because
you got a good big leaguer.
When you're doing the Avila tanking team building, you know, roster philosophy, you can't miss. Okay.
So yeah. not in the first round. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah,
well,
gotta have it.
That's right, B. You can't, when you're terrible in all the other rounds, you have to be good in the first round.
Yeah, right, because they tried those things. You know, I mean, you could look at Meadows. You can look at the Rivera deal.
Ray Rivera. Yeah.
Like they
remember when he was good for 2
things.
Weeks this year?
By the way,
a really smart guy.
He hit 2 home runs over the weekend.
I was having this discussion a few weeks ago, and a really smart guy named Brian Sikowski said to me, you know, if you hit a dude in the first round, nobody remembers how you fucked up the rest of the draft.
Yep. I think that's a perfect philosophy for the Tigers to embrace. Like,
if you get a dude at 3, you could do whatever the fuck you want the rest of the way.
That's right.
Yeah. All your schemes and plans for later on. Go ahead.
Let me ask you something. How true is that?
Yeah. If you get a 6 or better with your first pick, no one will give a single shit what else happened.
Right.
If you get a 5 also, if you get a 6 and a 5, it's hailed as the best draft your organization's ever had.
There you go.
You know, well, like really, that's what we're talking about here.
So understanding the philosophy of David Chad, who's really making this pick, by the way, if you understand what major league teams are doing right now, they've divided their front office into 2 camps. In fact, I think, you know, Cody Stegen even told me this, that they have Chad is doing the draft in one camp, and Avila and Littlefield are prepping for the trade deadline in the other camp. And all we can hope for is that they make no trades. So, should we feel pretty comfortable with the idea then that the top 4 on their list they'll be choosing from are Marcelo Mayer, Jack Leiter, Jordan Lawler, and Brady House, right? So,
well, then you got Jackson Jobe, yeah.
Well, I just cannot, in all honesty, if you're
– I don't either,
I can't see them taking Jackson Jobe. I just really can't.
I hope not. I think not.
Because I promise you, if they do, they will not be employed by the time he makes his first start in the major league.
I think that you have the top list there correct for the most part. I don't know, like, I haven't seen their board. You know, I'm not, like, breaking news here. Speculate and make educated guesses. I think that Meyer or Leiter would be the guy if they were there. I think they like Brady House more than Lawler, though I'm not 100% positive on that. And I think, you know, Jackson Jobe is, like, high on their board, but I think that they prioritize bats.
Just to show you what a good year is, what a good year 2021 is, you got – so if we're not going to include Jobe, you're not including Kumar Rocker, who – I watched him. Let me tell you, that slider – that's a 60-plus pitch, dude. That's playing anywhere, okay?
He's so good at spotting it, man. His breaking ball, his breaking ball location decision and execution is, like, elite.
Does that
play at this level at the show is the question.
Yeah. That pitch plays anywhere.
Yeah,
okay?
I tend to agree with you.
And to be really honest, the biggest worry I have about passing on Kumar Rocker is the fact that, you know, he comes from an athletic family. He understands work ethic well. They get him in better shape, and they tighten up his mechanics a little bit, and his fastball starts really playing all the time between 94 and 97. And his command with his fastball improves. That's a dude with that breaking ball, man.
Hell yeah, it is. Hell yeah.
And he's got the makings of a decent change, too. So
he's
there's a lot of upside in that. So if he goes to the right pitching org, he can be very, very good. Then you have a kid who I asked you about 2 weeks ago, because you know how much I love him, is Khalil Watson. That's a lot of firepower there.
That's a swing.
Yeah.
I mean, ooh. Yeah. Ooh, like that's a
strength, yeah. And that's some speed.
Yeah.
He's an athlete. Yep. I don't know if he's going to stay at short. That might be a stretch, but even at second, that's still a dude.
Oh, man, it's a – oof. I mean, like, that's – if we were lining up swing, like aesthetically pleasing swings in this class, who would you have above him? But now, it's important to remember that a pretty swing doth not a hitter make. But he has the makings of a good hit tool. He's got some juice there. He's an explosive athlete. It's fucking fun. But he's the guy with the least amount of track record. That dude came out of fucking nowhere last summer. So we did not have anything much with him moving up, like growing up. But it's been loud. It's been loud the whole way. So
and he's played against the least competitive competition. Is that fair or not?
Yeah, it's not been great. I don't know if it's like the worst league in the country, but like it's not been fantastic for him.
Compared to what other top choices are playing against.
Yes. Yeah, that's fair.
Is he from North Carolina?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Wake Forest High School.
Wake Forest. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So there's quite a, and just before we start diving into what we might see, you know, down in the 30s for the Tigers to make their next two picks, this seems to be a very rich top 60 of prep shortstops, et cetera. So why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's been wild, man. Honestly, like I know I kind of like sound like a stoner there, but like it's been wild, bro. this year, and I remarked on this a couple months ago, in one of our draft things, but this year I think is going to be that weird bubble year as a result of mostly because of COVID, where for so long the draft had been trending college forever. Like if you're not the top 10 high school player, go to college. Like that had been the trend. The draft had been heavy college. And now this year it's going to be heavy high school, and it's going to be heavy high school early and often, I think. And then next year, we're probably going to go right the fuck back to college. But we're in this weird bubble year because this is the one little blip where we have more data on high school players than we do on college players. And so scouts feel more comfortable because they have more looks at these guys. And the data teams feel more comfortable because they have more data on these high school guys. And these college guys who we thought were good are actually not good. And who we thought weren't good seems to be like they are. And we don't have enough data to explain those like trend paths. And so I think it's going to be a weird, like, all right, we're just going to say, fuck it, try our hand at six high school players early, and we'll just go right back to the college well next year after we have this full summer of Cape Cod and Team USA and all that stuff, and then a full fall, too, to get more track, man.
So it seems to be what you're saying is teams that have historically been very sharp at evaluating talent, there's going to be some really good players in the second and the third round that people are going to miss. And there's going to be some teams that get some really good players down there if they, you know, historically sharp.
And the super, super, super heavy modeling teams are going to take a bunch of players we've never heard of. You know, like just today I got a text from a buddy who was like, hey, Astros are going to take this guy in the fourth. And I had never heard of this person. You know, and it was just like, that's the ad. They're like, they don't even have scouts anymore, really. You know, so they're taking all these data guys who pop up just on the numbers, and no one's ever, you know, no one's heard of them. So like, watch out for that too. But yeah, I would tend to side with, like, you know, I'm a data friendly dude. I would tend to side with like multiple in-person looks from good evaluators that also meshes with analytics over just numbers, but that's just me.
And then you hope in, you know, the college guys, in the second, third, fourth, and fifth round, other people aren't onto it as well as you are with the data, and maybe you land something that no one saw. Yeah, you kind of hope there's more variance there that allows you to pluck somebody that no one else will see. Yeah.
There's going to be some dudes who, like, there's going to be some college guys taken in, like, the fourth or fifth, who were maybe first rounders entering the spring who had bad springs. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go in the fourth or fifth and actually end up being good because this bad spring was actually just the blip in the data. but yeah. we didn't have enough data to know that this was just the blip and not like who he is, yeah. you know? So yeah. we're going to, like, there's going to be some, oh, well, fuck, I shouldn't have moved that dude down from 18 to like 117 because he had a shitty spring. Like, we're going to see that, I think, too, like give it 3 years, but yeah.
So yeah. regardless of who those guys are, tell us a few players that are less well-known guys, say from 30 to 90, there's some guys that you like that you've maybe seen for a while or that might be intriguing.
All right, I'm gonna pull up the draft board here so I can just work right off of it. 30 to 90. Let's see. I mean, are we talking in terms specifically of like, who are we assuming the Tigers take? Do you want me to go from that angle, or is it just guys I like?
Well, I want you to tell me some guys you like, and I have a list of like 9 guys that I think will be down there, although you and I both agree that Bednar is thrown so well, it'll be pretty tough for him to be down
yeah.
at 30.
That was probably a guy at 32 or whatever, but now I don't know if he is anymore. Shit, man, there's some intriguing college in here that kind of gets lost in all the prep. I'm a big Spencer Schwellenbach fan. Part of that is bias. Like, I know the kid a little bit, but I also think he's really fucking good at baseball. So
Spencer Schwellenbach is the two-way player from Nebraska, plays short and pitches, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that his most likely, like, highest upside path forward is on the mound. But in that same breath, I think there's a chance he could be a starter. So, you know, if you believe in the stuff, and I buy the athleticism, I think he's repeatable. I think he does it pretty easy. I think he has feel for a third pitch, though he didn't need to throw it much this spring. I think it's relatively fresh, the arm. I buy it. So I think there's a chance that, like, you know, a low five type of starter, like a number five type of starter, upside there. And like, if you believe that, then why not target that, if you're with your second pick, wherever that may be, to make a long story short, I like Spencer Schwellenbach. Shit, man. James Wood, we have at 49, and like, there was like a 3 week to 4 week stretch last summer where James Wood was the best player on earth. And it was absurd. It was like, dudes hitting home runs on fastballs at his eyes, dudes hitting home runs on breaking balls below his knees. It was like a left-handed Vlad Guerrero who was like making it look okay in center at times. And he's huge, and it's faded away, and he did not have a great spring down at IMG, but I don't think he's going to – I think someone's going to grab him in the first round. I don't know who, but someone's going to take that dude. I don't think he'll be in play for, like, the Tigers' second pick. But that dude's got – there's a lot of players who go up and down in the spring and up and down and throughout the course of the ranking process. But, like, very few of them are ever, like, the best player on the planet. And that dude for a stretch was the best player on the planet. It's –
And that's huge raw power with him too, right?
Yeah, it's massive.
He
man.
Can run. Yeah,
left-handed. He's massive too. Like as a human being, I think he's probably
yeah.
like if he's not a corner outfielder, he's a first baseman more so than he's a center fielder. But either way, man, the bat upside is massive there. Shit, I don't know.
It's an interesting player, 37.
Yeah. We have Thatcher Hurd at 63. I like that dude a lot. SoCal right-handed pitcher, high school kid. It's a spin profile. You know, he's 6'4", 200 or something, like long projectable, what it looks like type of body. 90-93, the velo did not spike this spring like we thought it might, so that's not rocketed him up in the first round like it could have. But either way, he does it pretty easy. The slider spin is well over 3,000 consistently. There's just some spin efficiency inconsistencies, and I think with the right pitching dev, that's going to be a fucking hammer, and I think he'll throw harder. And I love that as a give that dude $2 million at your second pick and develop the fuck out of him, like, type of play.
I don't want to I'd like to always bring this discussion in, and Brandon, you'll remember his first name better than me. What was the relief pitcher we had last year, McKay? What was we got from Seattle? That
yeah, David McKay.
Oh, David McKay.
Remember what his spin profile was?
Yeah, it was like 3,100.
I just want people to understand.
Well, I mean, that goes, you could also compare him to like, you know, I mean, that's like Ray Rivera. Like they saw that giant number exit velocity and they kept just on that, you know.
Look, McKay was 93-95 with 3,100 RPM slider, and he was terrible.
I heard a Band-Aid ripping sound every time he threw it, too.
Right. All I mean by that is that it's nice to have good data, but you also have to have baseball aptitude to go with the data. And, you know, so it's fun to use the data as a guideline when you're drafting. And for sure, when you can get a guy, you know, third round, fourth round that has numbers like that, you would like to think the right board can polish a guy like that. And now that you have Chris Fetter creating the pitching protocol for the Tigers, guys like that seem more intriguing. That's my answer.
I mean, I think the other thing about Chris Fetter, too, is that, I mean, he might be the best guy to exploit, you know, the low spin pitchers, too, which have been, you know, widely overlooked. And, you know, we're going to see a lot of guys lose spin here pretty quickly, and we're seeing it already at the major league level. I mean, I guess this is a good question for Brian. I mean, are you seeing big concern for that about, you know, prep pitchers? Like, I mean, are people, like, checking Job's hands after this thing? Or, you know, what is the concern about how far this is reaching?
Honest to God, man, like, the biggest, it's funny that you asked that considering I had a call about it today. It's like the biggest concern as far as the checking hands and shit goes is like people concerned about what perfect game umpires are going to do this upcoming like tournament season. Not like, oh well, man, I don't know. Is Job's slider actually good or not? Like I haven't heard that at all, but I've heard like, hey, so you guys checking hands this summer? You know, like shit like that. So
Right. Like, you know, 2,900 will still be fine, but if we can build 3,200, it looks real good.
Right. Yeah. It's because it's like the exact opposite. Like, you asked the question expecting me to come at it from one way, and it was it was not that way. So that's why I was laughing. But
I don't want to digress too deep into this because I want to get back to players talking about the draft, but. You know, it's kind of an anomaly because I would feel very confident that going into 2022, there's going to be three or four grip protocols, let's say, or grip substances that they're going to approve between Major League Baseball and the MLBPA, and everything will be fine. They'll come up with three things everyone can live with, and we'll move on, and I'm sure it'll be the same three things the perfect game allows starting next summer. So
right.
I think
all that's required is a protocol, like some kind of actual standard that everyone can adhere to put, you know, put it literally.
How about the fact that they didn't have a meeting to do that right now? Just goes to show you.
I mean, Bauer's been trying to sell him on this, you know, spray machine in the dugout idea for 3 or 4 years now, according to him. I mean, it makes sense. Like, yeah, why not? Whatever.
Well, but I don't think that's crazy either. You know,
no, I don't know.
I think all of us that have been in the game understand, look, some type of grip enhancement, whether it's pine tar, whether it's suntan lotion, and rosin. All the pitchers I knew, including the one that grew up in my house, I've never met a pitcher that loved rosin. Never. Rosin makes the
They'd like wet their hair. Like put water in their hair before
guys
they walk
like
out
that.
And get gripped that way.
Oh, guys like that.
A little gel, maybe.
They like hair gel.
That was before the idea. That was before the idea that they were like increasing spin. That was like literally just to get a better grip to throw strikes.
It was really the weaponization of it by everyone tracking
right.
The experiment that took this to the nines. Yeah.
You want to give them 30 seconds on what happens when it's 39 degrees out on Orchard Lake and Pontiac Trail and you're playing a game and you
oh, man.
a kid like Porter's throwing 96 and it's 39 degrees, and if you didn't have some grip enhancement, how terrified would parents be when kids were getting in the box when the ball's like a cue ball on a day like that?
He was like up to 98 in his first start, and it was as you described. We were at Catholic Central. It was like 39 and windy, and he sprayed it. Like he walked like 20 dudes this spring, and like five of them were in that first start or something.
Yeah.
And he was spraying it, and it was like, I don't think he hit anybody. I don't know if he might have hit two people all season, but it was like, you know, you're not like scared for anybody, but you sure as fuck don't want to be in the box either, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I had my kid bringing gas for his era of playing, and we were in Toledo, and it was about 34, okay? Oh. I was terrified.
Oh, yeah.
That he was going to kill someone.
He's going to fucking hurt this kid 45 feet away.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't understand what I'm saying, the next time in the middle of winter, take a hardball, go stand outside for 5 minutes with it in your hands, and then try to rub it up a little bit, and tell me how you can get a good grip on it relative to when it's 60, okay?
Yeah.
It is, if you're a baseball person, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And having a kid who already has compromised control at that age to begin with, and he's throwing super hard, and that ball is slick, man.
And you only get two of them for the whole game.
Yeah. Go take a cue ball and think about trying to throw fastballs with it. It's not a real fun spot, and it's not fun for the pitchers. You know, people.
Those teams feel like they're not in there.
Fun for the hitters, people. So, all right, let's get back a couple more players, and then I want to ask you about a few that I thought would potentially be available between 32 and 37, because that's what people who listen to us like to know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, who here? In fact, let's just default to that. Let me throw a few names out for you.
Gotcha.
Mike McGreevy.
Yeah, I think he's way gone. I think
he's way gone by 32.
Yeah, I think he's going to go super high. He's an analytics darling. He's the dude who, like, to put this in broad strokes, like, he's the guy that analytics teams feel like is the exception to the rule with college pitchers, and that they can like double project on him. Usually, you cannot double project things onto college players; they're already too close to what they are. But this is the dude who the analytics are telling people, like, this dude has a chance to be the fucking Bieber, like that jump of guy.
He has good stuff, but more touch and feel too, though.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. It's very much like 45 to 55 grades across the board on his stuff, like a 90-92 guy. But I don't know. This is just, you know, what you hear. But yeah, I think he's going to go like potentially top 20 even, if not in the top 25.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Okay. What's the kid from Florida? Matt Mikulski?
Yeah.
Standard.
Yeah, I think he's a dead reliever, which is, like, it depends on how you value that. I think he's got a chance to be really fucking good. I think he's got a chance to be, like, what Garrett Crochet is as a reliever.
Words out of my mouth.
Yeah, but, like, Garrett Crochet is going the plan for Garrett Crochet is still to develop him as a starter. But, like, if you just took Garrett Crochet as is, as a reliever, that's what I think Mikulski could be. But, like, how do you value that on a team that still isn't in the playoffs? Like, you know, I don't know. That feels like a guy that if the Tigers had lost in the ALDS last year and, like, this fucking hammer dick lefty reliever could really help them now and in the next couple of years, like, the window's right here, then maybe. But I don't know if the Tigers are in that window yet. Yeah. So, I think he's good. I'm not saying he's not. I just don't know.
I weirdly would disagree with you a little bit about that because if you're – you know, I'm not saying I'm a Hinch whisperer, but I kind of get him. And if you've watched what he's done with the bullpen already, the idea of having a superpower bullpen,
yeah,
very much
it's appealing.
A priority of how he wants to build his team.
Give those young starters a lot of fucking leash, you know, because you have that bullpen.
Yeah. And you know, that's why as much as I like to have discussions about if you ask me who you're going to trade, I always like to bring up the Fulmer, Cisneros, Soto to trade. But if you want to dream on the Detroit Tigers, okay, and think that by next July, Torkelson will be at first and Riley Green is somewhere in right or center, okay, and their pitching is pretty damn good. Let's say they draft Jack Leiter, all right? Now all of a sudden Jack Leiter is in the rotation by July next year. The Tigers get super interesting if they have one or two more power relievers behind those three guys. All of a sudden, you know, as soon as they can add two legitimate hitters. They don't even have to be at their max. They just have to be slightly above major league average next year. That team is a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Add a couple more Grossmans, man. Then all of a sudden it gets fun.
Exactly. But, yeah.
And you know, my listen, I don't even know if Grossman will be on the team next July.
He might not. But I mean, you look at what they've done so far. It's remarkable how much of it seems to have to do with the coaching staff. Because you look at the actual talent level on the field, and it's still grim. You know, there's like
fucking. I just looked at the box score tonight. Both Castros still play, huh?
Yeah.
How about this? Ready?
We're getting our offerings from Eric Haas and Jake Rogers the last week. I did not predict any of that.
Here's the weirdest thing I don't understand. I mean, I love Hinch. All right, it's rare when I don't have a few things to say about something about that. He's been a 10, all right? Harold Castro is 5 for 51. Is the Harold Castro 15 minutes expired yet?
It's been a couple hours, yeah.
Can we go and playing him at shortstop? Are you crazy? Reminds me of the little league father that's playing his kid at short.
Freddy.
The kid's left-handed. Stop it.
The entire pitching staff is decimated, and they're letting, you know, I mean, I'm not going to lament Bo Burrows, but you're letting Bo Burrows go to keep Harold Castro, ooh, Nomar Mazara. What are we going to do? Who's pitching in the second half here? My God.
I don't know. Drew Hutchinson. But Brian, is that if you can get a guy like Mikulski at 37, and you think that he could pitch in the show in relief next summer at the break or after, it's not a terrible use of the pick. So are there other guys I like? Yeah. I mean, I've talked to you about other players. I mean, I like Gavin Williams just because,
no chance.
But I think
he's
going to be between 11 and 18 now.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, he's way gone. He's got a medical.
Two other good secondaries now.
He's got a medical thing. I don't know exactly what it is, and I'm not gonna but there's a medical thing. So I don't know if he's gonna go quite as high as the stuff dictates, but he's gonna go way before 30.
But he used to have command issues, right?
Yes, that was the deal. He was like a reliever. This is his first year as a real starter.
And he was always a reliever because he couldn't throw strikes. And then now all of a sudden it's like a 2 walks per 9 guy with like 3 pluses.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit. Like,
yeah. Okay. When I watched he's fucking the other huge. Day, I was yeah. like, holy shit. Is this
and he's
guy
like 6'6", 220. Like it's a big motherfucker, you know? Like,
I think he threw against Leiter.
He did.
I mean, him and Leiter, you don't see something like that very often.
That was fun. Yes. Man.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. So that was, I really liked that. Now, let's talk about a couple of bats that, actually 3 bats that I really like. I'm very in love after really studying and watching a little video. I really like this kid, Trey Sweeney. So talk to me about him.
He was kind of like, last year he was a bit of a guy rising up a little bit. It's like, it has not been like a, he didn't just pop up this spring is what I'm saying, but it has been a bit of a slower burn. Big left-handed hitting shortstop, smooth athlete, not extremely twitchy, but a good athlete for a dude who's that big. Like came into a bunch of power this spring. It's a good swing. Like he's a good swing decision guy.
Maybe probably, the best swing decision guy.
Yeah, like probably not a shortstop, but like who cares?
Yeah. If,
you know, with him.
Third base, left field would be fine.
Yeah, yeah, I think third base is fine. I just like, I don't know if he's going to be like that super twitch rangy enough to play short, but like if you're okay with him being a 45 defender at short, then yeah, he can play short. You know, Carlos Correa plays short, but you know, Corey Seager plays short or whatever. It's playing short's not as big of a deal. Anyway, yeah. I'm sorry. That's a different discussion. Like, yeah, can you bang? Like, sure, yeah. Bro, play short. Like,
yeah.
You said you're a shortstop? Okay.
All right. So talk a little bit about your boy who you've seen since he was a kid and who is going somewhere between 30 and 50. Talk to us about Alex Mooney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously had a really good spring. I think he did most of what he needed to do to cement his draft stock. He showed off more power. He needed to do that, but he still showed off the hit ability. I think he's like a really good like bag of fives. I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to have enough power. He's got an above average arm. He's a good runner. He's a plus runner. I think he can play short, and I think the worst-case scenario is he's a really good second baseman, and I also think he's such a good athlete that he could play center field, but I don't see any reason to move him. I think he's going to play shortstop. I think that goes right where you said, Mark. I know the Tigers have been out to see him repeatedly, as they should. He's right there, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's a solid everyday Major League Baseball player who plays for a long time. I know I'm privy to a little bit more being as, you know, I've coached him and just seeing the makeup, seeing the character, the type of person that he is from the type of environment that he comes from is, I would bet the upside there over betting the downside there.
It's a solid pick.
He's going to get what he's going to get everything out of himself. Kind of.
Yes. Thing. And he's got good tools. Like it's not a, you know, if there isn't a bunch of sixes, people question the tools, but like a bunch of fives is still pretty fucking toolsy guy. I don't know, man. I think he's fucking good. I would take him.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to talk about your own kids.
I was thinking there. Limited, yeah.
Just from my limited, you know, perspective, like he just doesn't look like he does it. He just looks like he does everything well. Like he just he doesn't like blow your mind, but everything's good. I don't see many weaknesses. And
you think Brian,
I have that kid there.
Is Kowski coming in for his draft party or what?
he's actually got to go to Duke. They mandate that their incoming freshmen do summer school. So he's going to Duke like soon.
Now, yeah.
So whether he gets drafted and ends up signing or not, he's going to Duke first. He's got to be there.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's not every college does it. Duke's one of the few. Well, it's probably not the few, but Duke's in the minority still.
By the way, I don't think he'll be having a bad time at Duke.
No, no, you know, he's going to take summer school. He's going to go to or he's going to be you know, doing summer ball workouts or whatever the hell they do. And yeah, I'm sure he'll have a nice time, but his ultimate decision will probably be made from Raleigh Durham, or, you know, believe it or not, not Orchard Lake or Rochester Hills or whatever.
All right, here's a kid. I don't know how much you know about him, but I know he can bang a little bit. How about Aaron Zavala from Oregon?
Yeah, it's one of those performance risers where, like, all of a sudden when you bang, your tools look better than when you didn't. You know, and like, that's just reality. Like, all of a sudden when you're kind of down on a guy because he's not a center fielder, because you're not in love with the bat. But like, if you really love the bat, then it's like, oh, well, but right field's pretty good too. You know, yeah. Like it, that's the way the scouting ends up going. But I mean, he's really performed. He's hit for power. I believe he's got a ton of walks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he'll
be
in
like walks.
Yeah, I think I think he's in play there. I don't know if he'll go quite that high. I would imagine he may be more. Where do they pick in the third?
Yeah, like,
you know,
they pick like what,
like 65 or some shit. You know,
maybe 70, like, I think.
Yeah,
74. Yep.
Yeah, so like, you know, I don't know if he'll go a whole lot before then, if at all. So I don't know. The performance guys, you never know. That's the ultimate like safe defensible cop out guy when you can't decide. Is the dude with massive numbers. So like when you know, like if you hit the panic button, you're like, fuck, I don't know who to take. Bam, performance guy. And then like if he's like a low four, it's like, oh man, but he fucking mashed, see?
We just missed there. Just
yes.
Missed.
Damn, we just fell in love with the tools, you know? But yeah, like, so I don't know if he'll go, I don't know if they'll have to target him at 39 if they love him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, listen, they did a pretty good job on last year's draft, okay? I think some, you know, look, I was never a huge Trey Cruz guy. I was talking to someone tonight, and I looked at the West Michigan averages, and Meadows was hitting 128, Cruz was hitting 107, and they were hitting 1-2, and Jose King was hitting 200 in the nine hole, and the person I said it to went, yeah, it's like having three pitchers in a row come up. And that person shall remain nameless, but it was funny as hell. Let's just say
in Trey Cruz's defense, I didn't really want him either, but he's barely played either. You know, he was
he's about 65 at bats into it now, Brandon, so it's not like,
hey, I wanted Anthony Servideo. He went right after him, and I'm not happy still. But, you know, sorry. Right. I'm probably not going to be upset in the long term about that much either. But
here's my answer. The other five guys have been pretty good. And the other thing I think that everybody's finding out about a lot of guys in the minor leagues is, you know, that second month is a big equalizer. Guys start getting tired about it at 100, and they've been playing 5-6 days a week. I saw people were mad that, you know, Green and Dingler did not play tonight, and they had an off day yesterday, and I'm like, dude, don't, that's actually smart, okay?
Yeah, yeah. Fucking
grinding,
relax.
Like crazy. Give them 2 days in a row off. Started.
Damn
off
right.
Tomorrow. Are you kidding me? You know,
I mean, you're in Erie, Pennsylvania. You get, you know, it takes a day or two to find some, you know, real fun and entertainment to blow off some
time. Yeah, you're damn right.
It's like you, it's not just being physically tired, it's being mentally tired, all right?
Yeah.
And the interesting thing was, Green was just mashing the last three or four games, but, you know, you're 160, 170 at-bats into it. You've been playing every damn day now for 7 weeks. A couple days off's a good thing.
Yeah.
So, they got plenty of time to play. It's like, people sometimes, it's like when I make fun of hitting Meadows and Trey Cruz at the top of the lineup there, and it's like, I know why they're hitting top of the lineup. I know why Zach Short's leading off tonight, because the entire premise of the minor leagues is you have guys that you want them to get at bats, dude. They don't care if they're winning that much. They want development. And see,
the same people who are complaining about that were mad when Parker Meadows was batting ninth last year. You know,
right?
They're making a bunt all the time. It's like, no, this is what they're supposed to do. Put them at the top of the order.
It's like I laugh when Josh Lester is hitting seventh. Of course, Josh Lester's going to hit seventh. He's not a prospect anymore.
He's got three kids and a mortgage. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, is Josh Lester deserve to be hitting seventh in Erie? Fuck no. He deserves to be hitting fifth. But what's the point of wasting the at-bats?
Yeah.
So, you know, people don't understand player development. That, you know, there's other things. It's like when people want to yell and scream at me all day about Miguel Cabrera, like Bob Page is mad because Miguel Cabrera is getting – and I'm like, dude. You know, can you take your 70-year-old self that's been out of Detroit for 45 years and go away? I mean, why are we having this discussion? It's the guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was hitting 297 for the month of June, basically just trying to hit singles. Leave the hell alone already, okay?
Yeah. We'll address
fucking
it.
Fucking relax.
Relax. When the Tigers are within two games of first place in July.
I'll worry about it.
Yeah,
then,
exactly.
Okay? When they're reeling them up to the plate and we're two games out of first, yes, I'll be yelling about it. Okay?
I will. I promise I will make a comment. Yeah.
But they're going to win 70 games. Shut up. Okay?
Yeah. Let them fucking hit. Damn it. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Yeah.
Ask me if the other eight guys in the lineup are mad that Miguel's hitting three or four.
Yeah, they worship him as their personal god at this point,
right.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
You think anybody's going to bitch? Yeah. Like, honestly.
Both of those guys, you know, know damn well that their hold on their spot is not real strong. So, yeah, they're not going to be complaining. It's pretty much Badu and, you know, Grossman and Candelario out there right now, and nobody else matters at all, you know?
Well, fucking good Shaquil Badu,
I mean,
man.
Yeah. I mean, he never went away. He kind of felt like he started to go away, but nope.
I mean, bro.
Yep. Still producing, man. Yep, and he's 22. He came here straight from high A. This is ridiculous, to be honest.
Yeah.
What if he's a fucking – I mean, this is the thing. You know, this is what happens, right? Like, what if – you know, sometimes this is what happens when teams fucking just build up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, what if this is the weird fucking, like, everyday guy that they found?
We've been waiting on one. They've had 5 years to find one.
Yeah.
With, you know, no reason not to experiment in every way. And, yeah, they just kind of, you know, kind of had one drop in their lap. Shout out to John Verberg on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Who was the first guy I saw. Yeah, who brought him up.
When he was still
I used to work for John.
Mm.
John's got a good eye, man. I've been to a game with John. John's strong. But, I mean, here's what I'll say to you. I for years I've been using, you know, the phrase process and profile. Guess what? If you consistently look for players using a profile of a player that walks a lot, a player that has athletic twitch skills, and you keep repeating the profile over and over, guess what happens sometimes? You hit on a few. Okay, and the fact that he had plate discipline and aptitude to go with other things allowed them to coach him up. And, you know, I don't care what league you're playing in, over 100 at bats, if you have a 500 on base percentage, I don't care if you're playing on the corner. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and the guy is like, what? He's like top five in the game in sprint speed as well, you know, with 55 power. It's like, yeah, this is a pretty good piece to get in here.
I don't know. You know what, Brian? I don't think he has 55 power this year.
No, but he might get to it. Yeah.
Swing down, okay?
Yeah.
But
he's hitting a bunch of doubles, right? Like, I mean, there's juice there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, in 2022 – I bet you has some more power then, okay?
Yep.
Because as he grows and he gets to go through another spring and they do a few more things with him, yes, he still has the power. He just, you know, they want him to put the ball in play because he's a great base runner. So
yeah, he'll find his own opportunities to, you know, to get the A swing off as he goes along. I think we've seen him hit it 430, 440 at least once.
Oh, dude, he can still rush. He hasn't hit an apple taco
development.
Sweet.
Like,
So, this was a high school kid taken in the third round of the draft that gave the Tigers Alex Fiedo, right? Like, yeah. This is very recent history. This guy. Very early in his development still.
Yep.
And he's hitting 265 with 145 at bats in the show.
Yeah, he's walking more than he strikes out, dude.
He's got like, he's got like a 20% walk rate.
Yeah. Yep, he does. I mean, he is not swinging at anything off the plate now. And he's pretty, he's been good at that. They switched to throwing him all those changeups for a while, and he had to deal with that. But, yeah.
He jumped all over a hanger today.
Yeah.
So, that's why when I said that I don't know if Grossman will be on, unless somebody's going to DH. But, Akil Badu's a left fielder. Let's not confuse this here. He's not a center fielder. He's a left fielder when you're playing for real. Okay. And I would say that it's 80% likely that Green will play right. You think that's fair, Brian, or not?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think that he can come up as whatever you want him to come up as. Probably eventually, but he's done nothing but, like, prove everybody who said that during the draft wrong so far.
Yeah.
So fuck it. Yeah, let's bring him up in center. Like, I don't –
It's a pretty good highlight reel in center so far, yeah.
Yeah, like, let him play center. I don't care.
If you want Grossman to play center – I mean, play right next year and Green to play center, okay, obviously you need a fourth and fifth outfielder that hits right-handed. And I've always said that if, either Cameron or Derek Hill is – we'll see what happens to Cameron. I still think he's a fourth outfielder. And probably a really good fourth outfielder, by the way. And
yeah,
I think Derek Hill is Jake Marisnik. So that's why Hinch likes him. He saw exactly the same skills that Jake Marisnik had for him in Houston. Super glove, occasional power, doesn't really hit if he has to play too much, but is a game changer on defense in the eighth and ninth inning when you're ahead. And
when you're behind and you need him to steal a base. Yeah, one of the two.
Yeah, either one. He's got two. It's when people ask me why I hate Victor Reyes so much and let me count the ways, but what's his carrying skill?
Yeah, he just doesn't do anything, He can play pepper. I mean, Vicky Peppers, man. That's what it is.
He's a great pepper player.
He is.
Elite.
Saucer, my man. But, Derek Hill, as a bench player, that's a game changer for you, dude. He does two things amazing on a good team. So
yeah. That's the fucking – yeah, I don't – and there's, like, there's a universe – I still believe this, and maybe I'm off, but I still think there's a universe where, like, a World Series team can win the World Series with Derek Hill playing every day and hitting ninth.
I don't think so. I don't think Derek Hill can stay healthy for 100 games.
That's fair. That's more fair than, like, I just think, like, assuming, he plays 140 games or something. Like, I think he absolutely could be a fucking solid average player on the strength of his speed and defense. But
if Derek Hill hit left-handed, he's Jared Dyson, And they did win with him. Maybe more.
Jared Dyson. Jared Dyson's banker is really happy to have known him. I mean, that's 14 years in the league, all right?
Yeah.
So Jared Dyson made a couple of shekels. And, my joke to Keenan yesterday was when he was asking about Derek Hill, I said, he'll be healthy till the next time a butterfly lands on him. But in the meantime, in a perfect example, so Byron Buxton comes back yesterday. He comes back Saturday, hits a homer. Yesterday, he could sit in a hand, out.
Yep. It's infuriating. Is there something
I don't
want to
fucking talk about it.
Yeah, it's brutal, man.
Yeah, one of the most talented players this era of the last 10 years.
Oh.
How do we scout bone density?
Yeah, I mean, someone's fucking trying, I bet. Like,
they probably are.
Yeah. Don't discount that. that's just...
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, he's just so talented. I mean, he's ridiculously talented.
It's like, who are the comparables? Fucking Bo Jackson.
Eric Davis, that's it.
Like, what if this dude didn't get hurt? He'd have been the greatest player fucking ever.
Yeah.
Like
a lot of Bo Jackson clips just last night. So, yeah, he's
pressing.
Eric Davis.
Yeah, Eric Davis. Fucking Rocco Baldelli.
Right there,
like,
Eric
I don't know.
Davis.
You know?
Yeah.
you could argue Mickey Mantle's a Hall of Famer, like a top 100 player ever, but he could have been the greatest ever if he hadn't ever gotten hurt, maybe.
Right.
But like,
he would have had surgery the way they have it now. So
yeah, yeah.
All right, before we get out of here, we kind of skipped over him, and God knows I love him. I don't usually rave about players. The two of you know that. I rarely rave about players. I kind of reserve that for Miguel Cabrera and Mike Trout and people that great. But Jack Leiter, I've seen him twice in the last 2 weeks. I've seen him at not his peak. I've seen him when he had 94 to 96 anytime he wanted it and kind of sat there. That's Walker Buehler to me. That's a really advanced skill set and package. Bri, talk to me a little bit about this. You've watched it for a long time and seen the evolution, but talk to me about Jack Leiter a little bit.
And I actually like low key, this isn't actually true, but kind of true. I claim to have found Jack in the sense of putting him on a national radar. He came to a showcase like right after his freshman year of high school that I was at in South Jersey. And like was 83, 86, four pitches for strikes, you know, kind of small, like, you know, just super advanced command. And then it's just progress from there on in the exact like path you'd want it to. He never, you know, so what? He's not small, I don't think. You know, but anyway. It's an elite baseball game. I think his aptitude is off the charts. I think he's, you know, in terms of aptitude, in terms of obsession with his craft, like similar to Casey Mize in that sense. I think that meshes extremely well with a guy like Chris Fetter.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any would optimize Leiter better, you know.
Change up.
And going from Al Leiter to Scott Brown to Chris Fetter along a developmental trajectory, like that to me is extraordinarily enticing. I think the breaking ball has become a plus pitch. I think he's got a chance to have a plus slider along with it. We've seen some flashes of an idea of a changeup, Mark, like you said, I think it's in there. And I'm generally like, you know, we've heard Carson Fulmer, you know, whispers of like, oh, the short performance Vanderbilt righty who goes too high and then actually isn't good. But like, totally different profiles. Fulmer didn't have near the fastball quality, and Fulmer could not spin the ball ever. That was the White Sox buying a changeup guy.
I think it's Walker Buehler, period.
Yeah, I don't know if he's quite as projectable, in terms of like projecting velocity, carrying velocity, but I do agree in terms of continued development from this point forward, like that upside is vast, yes.
Yep. And just tons of pitchability, you know, I mean.
Yeah, man, he's a fucking competitor, like, yeah. I love it.
Yep.
The only question I have about him, and you have
he's 6'1", right? He's not like 5'9".
Yeah,
you know, people are talking
fine.
About like, he's little. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, he's 6 foot tall, like, whatever.
He's bigger than your Donald Ventura. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, like he's fucking, yeah, he's, yeah.
Bigger than Tim Hudson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but he's, yeah, he, the only question
that's, I have. Fastball plays well with the shorter guy, too. Like that arm angle is like, I mean, it's like a flat laser beam coming
true
at
true vertical, yep,
I
carry
think about
up in the zone.
Like Craig Kimbrell type fastball almost, yeah.
You just worry how durable guys like that are. You don't know.
Right.
It's always a question almost on any pitcher, and that's my only question. I think the kid, if you needed him to, could pitch in the show by the All-Star break next year. That's how advanced I think he is. So, and like if you really pin me down, he would be, you know, that's the highest floor player, and I think the quickest rate of return, like you said it. Puts him in the Torkelson, Dingler.
You sign yourself a couple bats, you know, you draft Jack Leiter, and by late next year, you're a very interesting baseball team, I think.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree
this
more.
This is how you accelerate the timeline.
Yep.
I couldn't agree more. All right, guys. I want to try to wrap it up before we put everyone to sleep. Brian, much congrats on another title. It's always the most 90 minutes that we have all summer talking about this stuff with you. I'm sure I'll hear you another 26 times before the draft. Are you guys going to do a draft night thing like you did last year, you and Vinny, or no?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the plan is, but the PGTV production crew is presently kicking around ideas. The thing is, Vinny and I are both going to be on the road. Jared will also be on, like, we're all going to be on the road. So we're going to be at East Cobb. It's the WWBA is happening, and the draft takes place, and then we all travel to Tampa for PG National. But, like, so we're trying to figure out a way to, like, weaponize the, like, scout tower at East Cobb for production value.
Yeah.
So we'll all, like, all be sitting up there talking, and then, like, if something happens down on one of the fields, one of us can run down to see it. And then we'll shoot back up. You know, like, we're going to try something or another. But, yes, I don't know.
I'm jealous about East Cobb because I have been there twice. And it is
– That would be cool.
It is the mecca of youth baseball in the United States. I don't think that it's unfair to say that.
No, okay? It's incredible, man.
Even going to the outlying fields, not on the property, when you go to some high schools, it's worse than a lot of colleges. And, God, that red clay is a beautiful freaking thing, dude.
You're damn right.
It even smells good. Now, the traffic is not too fun. But,
not great, no.
but the experience in East Cobb is very unique and pretty amazing. And I still think that is the mecca of youth baseball in the United States, and I dare anyone to tell me I'm wrong about it. So, all right, Pete, thanks a lot for hanging out with us.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to do it again next year.
Maybe we'll check in with you after the draft, see if we can lure you back on. Yep.
I'm down, man, to say when. I'll be good.
Yeah, awesome. You know, let's plan on doing that. And let's plan on – and so, you're not even in town. I was going to say, come down to the stadium and meet we like to hang out down there, Brandon and I and the boys. But we'll let us know when you're in town. We'll try to work around you.
You got it, man.
Absolutely. All right, man. Thanks a lot. We're this is Don't Call It a Team Build and Bless You Boys podcast. We'll see you soon. Thanks a lot.
Not at all.